You've heard AM, you've heard FM. Now, tune into DM Radio, the world's longest running show about data. Each week, host Eric Cavanaugh interviews the brightest minds in the world of information management. Want to be on a show? Send an email to info@dmradio.biz. Now, here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to the longest running show in the world about data. It's called DM Radio. Yours truly, Eric Cavanaugh. And we're going to have a special guest host with us today. Danielle Overdeer from Dicayo Data is dialing in. I found Danielle a few years ago and was so excited to see she's based in New Orleans. I'm like, New Orleans and data. This is happening. It's real. We're feeling it.
That may have been what you said verbatim, honestly.
That's awesome. So Danielle, tell us a bit about yourself. Then we'll be hearing from Jonathan LaCour from Mission. We've got Ankur Gupta from Bitwise and Randall Hunt from Kalyn. But Danielle Overdeer, you take it from here. Tell us about yourself and then just dive right in and talk to our friends today. Take it away.
Awesome. Yeah, this is my first kind of solo rodeo. We're grooming me to be more involved in the hosting process, and it's really, really awesome. So thank you for letting me drive today. And so for me, I am a founder, two-time founder, but my current business, Dicayo Data, is a media company that amplifies the voices of underrepresented folks in tech and mainly people who are in data. I have a huge focus on women, non-gender binaries, and the Black community, but I love interviewing everybody and anybody. And so it's really fun whenever Eric and I pair up on anything. So, yes, I want to start with Jonathan LaCour. You have a very French name, and we were just talking about New Orleans, which is where I live and Eric has lived. So tell me a bit about Mission and how you're using, you know, how your cloud strategy is progressing. And
sure. Absolutely. Well, a pleasure to be here. First of all, as Danielle, you mentioned, my name is Jonathan LaCour. I'm the Chief Technology Officer at Mission Cloud. Mission Cloud Services is a cloud services company. We are a AWS focused partner, and we're a premier consulting partner of AWS. And what we tend to be is a partner for the long haul for our customers. And so for us, lift and shift, when we're walking through a lift and shift strategy with our customers, it's the starting point of a journey, right? And in general, that is the strategy that I advise people on and our customers on. If they're going to choose a lift and shift strategy, this needs to be where you begin. It needs not need to be where you end. And so everything that we do around migrations is really tailored towards that. What's your long-term strategy? What's your goal? Are you trying to modernize ultimately? Are you trying to access kind of some of the innovative, kind of features that are available in the public cloud that maybe is a little bit more difficult for you to do outside? Are you looking for performance, resiliency, security and compliance? Like what are the motivating factors? And then everything beyond that sort of stacks up around that strategy.
Cool. So when you first started, did you know that lift and shift was not going to be your end result? Or when you started, were you kind of trial and error figuring it out and then later decided, oh, wait, we can go further from here?
Yeah, well, Mission is very much a born in the cloud business. And so we've always understood the potential and the present as well for the public cloud. And that is not to be just a traditional data center that you access with an API, right? It's much more than that. There's a lot of opportunity to take advantage of, incredible feature sets, unbelievable scale, lots of things that you can do in the public cloud that you can't do elsewhere. But you can only do that if you're operating in a different way, right? You have to have a cloud native solution to be cloud native. And that means your workloads will probably have to shift and change. Your infrastructure approach will have to shift and change. So for us, we always knew lift and shift is a starting point. And in fact, it's not always the only starting point. Many customers we advise not to start there, right? It depends on their business goals. It depends on the situation, right? Most of the time we encounter a lift and shift, it's based upon a compelling event, right? And so that could be something like, you know, we had a business who was in a data center that was going to get shut down, and they got notice that they had 4 months to migrate, right? So that's a compelling event that indicates you don't have a lot of time to do replatforming, to do refactoring, to rearchitecture. What you really need to do is you need to get from point A to point B as quickly as humanly possible, right? So that your business stays up, right? Another compelling event, we had a customer who they're in the education tech market, and 2020 happened, and COVID caused their business to explode in really good ways, right? Because everybody needed remote learning technology, and they were hosted on-prem in an environment that would not allow them to really meet the opportunity where it was. And so they thought about it quickly and said, hey, we need to do a quick migration, and then we need to optimize so we can take advantage of all that scale. And that really ends up being the you know, most of the time there's a compelling event that causes a lift and shift to beat the strategy.
I have so much more that I could ask about that, and we'll get back to it in the roundtable. Sure. But the case studies definitely illustrate kind of which scenario fits best with it. I want to go to Ankur Gupta, who's the CEO of Bitwise. Do you have anything to add about lift and shift's role in your strategy?
Hey, Eric. Hey, Daniel. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Just quick introduction to my company, Bitwise. As we are a full broadline solution services company that focuses all things data. So data on-prem, data on cloud, data management. And then we've been around for 25 years. So we've done a lot of on-prem work. We've worked on a lot of traditional technologies. And many of our clients are looking to move to cloud or have moved to cloud. So we do come in early on and advise our clients on whether even cloud to begin with is a good strategy, even before it comes to lift and shift, refactoring, re-engineering, whatever that may be. And in some cases, it may not be. So we start very early in the game. And if it doesn't make sense for a client, if there's very specific requirement, clients who are looking for sometimes virtual private cloud or very specific requirement that's not giving them the benefit of the cloud early on, may not be a good strategy. But most cases in today's world, that doesn't happen. We do have lift and shift, like Jonathan said, as a starting point for many of our clients. If it doesn't take to tinker their application a whole lot more, that may be a quick strategy to go and move the application from on-prem to cloud and get the benefit. But then there are limited benefit of cloud in that strategy, of course. You're still using that single server on-prem to a similar structure on cloud. What we have done, it made it easy for our clients to do the, if speaking strictly to lift and shift, we have a vanilla lift and shift approach. We've laid it out pretty much in detail on our website, but we use cloud native services such as Docker, Kubernetes, etc. to do that migration. We have a very detailed architecture and steps that we have laid out on our website, and we lay out in our conversation with our clients to exactly show them how we will be able to do that, how we'll be able to set up those high availability Kubernetes clusters on their preferred cloud environment, and be able to have them try cloud before they go full force. And that's somewhere we've used lift and shift a lot more than say, hey, lift and shift is the strategy. Let's go pick a cloud A and move there. I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about that, but that's just my initial opinion.
So I find it super interesting that Bitwise has been operating for 25 years, you said, and then Mission started in the cloud. So I'm assuming that because you've been around for that long, that there was a hefty transformation process at some point that maybe, Jonathan, you did not have to go through because you started in the cloud. So I hope that made sense if y'all want to kind of compare those two very different starting points. I'd be really interested.
I think both worlds exist, and you don't need a full transition from one to another. I'd say our advantage is we understand the on-prem world really well. We understand the nuts and bolts of it. And then as cloud environment is evolving, there are newer technologies every day. You've got to understand a source before you take it to the target. And I think just because we have a deep understanding of source systems, taking it to the target is not as hard a part. And we also part of those, we are actually partnered with the major cloud technology providers who are helping them come up with, as they're building the ETL systems and technologies, we're actually one of the partners in their product development space for those companies. And that would only be possible because of our experience in taking on-prem services, on-prem technologies, on-prem applications, data, to migrate it to cloud. How would that scheduler work from on-prem to cloud? How would you migrate data from on-prem to cloud? And it's, I mean, of course, that space has matured a whole lot more, but I think, I believe that having that on-prem knowledge, knowing nuts and bolts of that is an advantage for us, and that has helped us really advise our many of our clients and also work closely with our partners as we do the migration.
And, Jonathan, do you have anything to add? Oh, perfect.
No, I actually, I'm in violent agreement with Ankur. Actually, it's important to acknowledge that we're kind of still in many ways at the beginning of this cloud transformation journey across the world, right? Because there's lots of businesses that have not yet made the move or have not started to really realize the full benefits there. And the cloud is continuously evolving and moving, right? And so, you know, you have to acknowledge the fact that there are a lot of people who have the need to migrate, who have on-prem infrastructure, some of them who want to keep it, right? And have both, right? And so it can't be a sort of just because Mission is born in the cloud doesn't mean that we are off the hook to understand where we're moving customers from or the fact that they may have reasons for why they are on-prem infrastructure, right? So, I think it's a completely fair and an accurate thing to say you need to have that capability, you need to have that understanding. I think the big difference for us is that, you know, we are not in the business of, you know, doing continuous improvement on on-prem infrastructure. And so that's probably the only difference I would say is if we have a customer, we are best aligned with that customer when their goal is to get to the cloud and be there. If they are a company that has maybe, you know, a small percentage of their infrastructure on cloud, you know, we can help them. But our ideal customer is usually one who's all in, right? Who's ready to go all in.
Awesome. Yeah, let's kind of continue with that, you know, type of customer analysis. And either of you can answer this. Who has the most difficulty? Like what type of persona, that's a marketing word, has the most difficulty with adopting a new strategy to, you know, be fully cloud operational?
You mean the type of companies, the segment?
Yes. Like basically the type of companies, I said person or persona, but basically the type of client that has the most difficulty.
I'll start, and I'm sure, Jonathan, you have a lot more to add. We work in all sectors. We have some of the Fortune 100 companies in retail, in healthcare, in financial insurance domain. And I think... I would say the whether cloud otherwise, whatever time it takes for a company to make or a sector to make decision continues the same way in the cloud. So if a particular sector is slow in making decision or adopting technology, cloud or no cloud, they're still the same way in the cloud space. Probably slower in the cloud space because now you are somewhat sharing, you're somewhat going to a shared infrastructure with which, you know, some sectors may be more particular about PII data, healthcare or personal information or security, or, you know, there could be many other consideration, high availability, et cetera, et cetera. Having said that, I think I think company size does matter too. It's if, and who is driving the initiative. Some company, if it's top down, if the executives have made the decision that that's the strategy that makes sense, then we've seen all sectors move fairly quickly too. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about the strategy, how do companies, the decisions move forward. The speed changes with where you are in the decision space and who's driving it. But in general, what we have seen is the sector decision-making style remains the same, whether it's cloud or otherwise.
That's well put, Ankur. And I agree with that. And I think for me, it's less about a segment that's difficult to migrate or has the most struggle. It's more about the culture of that business. And the segment can absolutely be a driver for that, right? You know, large-scale financial services companies tend to not be as forward thinking in that way sometimes, right? Or, you know, it really does influence it. But really, ultimately, it's the culture of the business, right? You know, public cloud, if you're taking this lift and shift strategy, you have to be careful that you're not allowing your culture to think of the cloud just as a different place for where your workload is, right? It's an opportunity to transform how you do business. And it offers you entirely new ways to operate and to develop new technology and to, you know, evolve your business. And if you're not doing that, if the company doesn't have that mindset, they're going to struggle the most, right? Because they're going to get there. They're going to do a lift and shift and they're going to be like, why am I spending so much money, right? Why am I not going any faster? Why am I having all these problems? And the answer is usually it's not the cloud, it's you, right? Like, you know, let us help you transform that, right? You need to start to embrace, you need to move beyond just lift and shift, and you have to start taking advantage of what's there once you are there. And you need to address your internal teams to enable them to gain the power, right? And a lot of these culturally misaligned businesses with cloud, they have expectations around you can't get access to infrastructure. You can't get infrastructure unless you go through this ticket system and go ask for, and like, that's just not how the cloud works. Cloud has infrastructure on demand. Cloud should enable your developers to go quickly, right? And if you have all this process wrapped around the notion of on-prem infrastructure and requesting new hardware and things like that, it's a complete disconnect between the cloud and your culture. So that's the type of company that has the biggest struggle, in my opinion, is ones that aren't culturally aligned with the cloud. They have to embrace it. Otherwise, they're in deep trouble.
Yeah, I would also add that, you know, within a company, you can see different speeds. Sometimes there are departments where we have seen that, you know, one department's moved to cloud, another is still on-prem. And sometimes lift and shift helps because you can quickly move, you can rehost your applications from on-prem to cloud, show some success, and that could motivate other departments to move with that speed. It's interesting, Jonathan, you mentioned financial company. In fact, one of our largest cloud refactoring, re-engineering work was actually in a financial space where we rewrote the whole very large mammoth, this Goliath of application from on-prem to cloud. But I completely agree with the speed at times.
Well, yeah, this is good. This is good stuff, folks. I'll chime in. We're getting near the end of the break here, but got our co-host ably taking care of good questions here. I love it. Daniel Oberdier from DKIO Data. She'll be up next along with our third guest, Randall Hunt. It's been waiting in the wings from Kalent. Send me an email if you want to get on the show, info@dmradio.biz. We're mapping out the second half of the year right now, folks. So don't be shy. We want to know what you want to know. info@dmradio.biz. That comes straight to me. We'll be right back. You are listening to DM Radio.
Welcome back to DM Radio. Here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
All right, folks, back here on DM Radio with a special guest host with us today, Daniel Oberdier of DKIO Data. She is a beacon of data light from New Orleans. She's actually from New York, but lives in New Orleans, and she's fully transplanted there now and giving New Orleans a good name as far as I'm concerned in data. So please bring in Randall Hunt next, and I'll sit back and send some tweets and some LinkedIn shares. Take it away, Danielle.
Usually I'm the one tweeting, so we've swapped roles for the day.
That's true.
Yes, I am grateful to be here. So, yeah, Randall, you heard what the other two panelists were saying about lift and shift's role in their cloud strategy. So I want to hear from you about where you fit in with Kalent.
Great. Yes, thanks so much for having me on. I work as VP of Cloud Strategy and Solutions at Kalent. So Kalent is a cloud native consulting partner focused on AWS. We build and design services and perform migrations for customers and really kind of work with our customers to make sure they're taking full advantage of AWS. What my background is in, I have been a software engineer for a long time, and I've spent my whole career kind of working with AWS and working with cloud. And, you know, I started out at MongoDB, and then I went on to AWS, then I went on to SpaceX, then I went back to AWS for 5 years, and then I worked at Meta for a little bit. And now I'm here at Kalent. And It turns out everywhere I go, we end up using AWS and we end up using the cloud. And so I've seen a couple different stages of these migrations and these compute data storage platforms and how you evaluate them over the years. It's been a lot of good fun. And I just feel like we have a duty to kind of spread that knowledge around so people don't end up making mistakes.
Do you feel like you often refer back to, you know, your experiences at SpaceX, Meta, WoW, AWS, kind of to inform people who haven't worked there, who you're working with?
100%, yes. And, you know, I'll say especially about AWS is I was lucky enough to get exposed to thousands and thousands of AWS customers. So I was able to see, you know, firsthand exactly what customers were doing and derive kinds of, you know, patterns from that, you know, categorizations and patterns that you can use in your migration strategies. And, you know, the topic that we're talking about today of lift and shift, I'll say something a little challenging here, which lift and shift, in my opinion, is an organizational goal and an organizational driver. It is not a technical goal. So technically, there's nothing that prevents people from incrementally modernizing or incrementally migrating. But lift and shift is kind of this organizational North Star guiding method that helps get organizations that would otherwise be unmotivated into the cloud. And it's really a jumping off point. As Jonathan said, it's just the beginning.
Yes. And why is it important? And this is something when we come back with the roundtable that anyone can answer, but why do you feel like it's important to keep that data intact when you're just starting out? Because from what I understand, lift and shift means kind of like when, you know, those houses that people buy that are already perfectly made and you lift them up and put them on a plot, like that type of thing. So why is that, you know, keeping it intact necessary at that stage?
So, you know, if I dive a little deeper there, you have a number of choices when you're moving your data and your applications. You can rehost, which is kind of this lift and shift. You can replatform, which is lift, shift, and tinker. You can repurchase, which is when you move to a different kind of tool or backend or data storage solution. You can refactor and rearchitect, or you can retire. And retire is interesting, actually, because, you know, I would say around 20% of enterprise IT is vestigial. It's legacy. It's no longer needed. And we often find when we're doing kind of our assessments and our discoveries with customers that you can just kind of chuck it out the window. It's no one's really using it anymore. It's just this agreement that you signed 10 years ago that you haven't really kept up to date with. And then there's retain, which means you would keep it on-prem or you would keep it within your existing cloud provider and do nothing. And when we focus on the rehosting and the replatforming, that lift, tinker, and shift, the reason you want to keep the data intact is that the technical complexity of simultaneously moving the data between physical storage mechanisms or physical compute nodes is large enough that you cannot reasonably also incrementally move the application stacks and the other components. And what the cloud affords, and I'm specifically talking about AWS here, is this ability to go in and after you've performed this lift and shift, and I'm happy to talk through a couple of kind of cool examples there if you're interested, but after you perform this lift and shift, you have this very kind of interesting opportunity to take advantage of things that can only be built in the cloud and only exist in aggregate workloads. Like you could never build some of the technology that AWS has in a commercial data center, in a data center where you were co-located. You know, you'll hear from folks like InfiniBand and Lambda Compute and, you know, who are talking about their servers. And these are amazing, wonderful pieces of hardware. But the scale that AWS operates at allows them to aggregate workloads and realize things that really push the boundaries of physics and first principles engineering. So like I said, lift and shift, it's that first jumping off point, and you do it as an organizational goal and to save on the complexity. And then you do that modernization and incremental kind of re-architecting and refactoring. Sorry, that was a very long-winded answer.
No, it's perfect. It makes sense. I do not use, you know, since I don't have, I'm the only one working on DeKaio Data right now, but I do work with our studio, and I know that, you know, there's a lot of technology has cloud capabilities that users can access and kind of learn more about how it works, even if you're not part of a large infrastructure where people are building on the cloud. I want to know, and this is something any of you can answer, but Randall, I want to start with you, but then anyone can jump in. Where do the customers, the individual customers, fit into your strategy? Because we've been talking primarily B2B.
Yeah, I think this is an important question that is often misunderstood. Many customers will come to us and say things like, oh, I want the reason that's motivating my lift and shift migration, the reason that I'm migrating to the cloud is because I want to achieve an RTO, a recovery time objective, or an RPO, recovery point objective, of this magnitude. While I think those are good goals to have, what I found works much better is pushing back on the customer to say, these are technical goals. How do you derive those technical goals from your business goals? And when you work from that first principles analysis of what your end customers as a business are experiencing and what this migration and this movement allows, that's when you can really starkly define and precisely understand what this migration is gaining, what you're going to be able to say is complete and done, and what is a successful kind of opportunity or a successful lift and shift migration. If you start with the technical goals, yeah, it becomes very hand-wavy and shaky about whether or not you actually added any value there. So we always push back on our customers to say, how is this going to improve your business?
Yeah, very much in agreement, Randall. And I think that's actually a perfect example of, they have to think right to left, not left to right. Right. If you're just saying like, okay, I need to get to the cloud. Why? Because cloud, that's not a reason, right? You have a business driver. And, you know, you were mentioning Danielle, and we're talking about data here. One of our customers is the Boston Celtics, and they use R to do massive amounts of analysis. Think of it sort of like Moneyball, but for basketball. Right. And they were in a situation where they were doing everything on-prem. Right. They had this really expensive big iron servers, but they were mostly sitting idle all the time. And then they would spin up into action when they got a data dump from all of the games around the NBA every night. And then they would churn for three straight days and produce a report, which was very useful for the coaches, but it was 3 days old, right? And so this is a perfect business driver. They came to us and said, hey, how can we make this faster? And we said, we can move you to the cloud. And here's what we can do, right? We've got more servers there that are bigger and better than the ones you have on your data center. Oh, and by the way, we can turn them off when we're not using them. Oh, and by the way, we can parallelize beyond the two servers that you already have. We can parallelize to 100, right? And now they're getting their data processed in 4 hours. And so the coaches wake up in the morning, they show up at work at 6 o'clock, and they have a report that says, here is your opponent for the day. Here's where the shooting patterns were. Here's what their strategies have been over the last week, right? And that's the business driver, right? The business driver is to play better basketball, right? Play better basketball. And I can do that by accelerating my delivery of my data. And I can do that by moving to the cloud. And I'm going to start by lifting and shifting. And then I'm going to start, you know, realizing the benefits over time. So it's, you know, I could not agree more with what Randall said there.
Ankur, do you have anything to add to that?
I think I was going to build upon, Randall put it really well together about, and it goes back to what I was starting earlier, that we've been around for a while. We've seen a lot of companies, a lot of our current customers or the companies that we work with are maybe in a very early stage of going to cloud. And then, are they going to benefit from the savings, the scale, the capabilities that cloud provide? And it's not a fit for all. One of the examples, Jonathan picked a very good example in the game space. We have a financial customer who is looking to build fraud analytics use cases, a retail customer who is looking to build a voice-first use case. Those kind of use cases may not be possible. I shouldn't say not possible, may not be feasible in the on-prem space. The cloud comes with some of the de facto applications and the scale that these use cases where you need massive compute, you need quick processing of data in a very very short time period, nanoseconds or pretty much real time. That's where I think cloud provides the capabilities, and lift and shift could be just the starting point, but you still need to do refactoring, re-engineering, and other to make it useful to the cloud. And I think in most cases, like I said, in today's world, as data is coming from all sources, social media and whatnot, and I think it's more beneficial than not, just the data size, the way it is growing. And we used to talk about petabyte being big, but it doesn't seem like that's the case anymore. But it's in most cases, that's a fit, but may not be useful for some smaller customer. And lift and shift could be just a strategy to save money from the on-prem cost that a customer is bearing. But most of our experience in B2B space, so I couldn't really comment on the individual customer and individual in that space.
Yeah, fantasy football is my love language, so I love that we turned it to sports.
Love it.
Fantasy football is my love language in that I love to play, the odds and the data, but basketball is my favorite to watch in person. So there's that. Before we go on the break, I just want to ask Randall, you mentioned SpaceX, and I find Elon Musk fascinating. And I have some colleagues over there that have been working, like previously Boeing switched to SpaceX. So in particular, how did you apply cloud strategy there?
So, I don't want to reveal SpaceX's, secret sauce or internals, because there's probably a sniper outside my window who's ready to shoot me if I talk about it, right? They operate in a fairly controlled environment. It's called the ITAR, the International Traffic and Arms Reduction Treaty. And so it's honestly a little bit outdated. It's one of the reasons that SpaceX has such a hard time hiring non-US citizens is because of this ITAR thing, but that's a topic for a whole other time. If we don't necessarily talk about SpaceX, but we talk about a hypothetical large customer with many exabytes of data that started before the cloud was prevalent, you have the situation where you already have existing on-prem kind of workloads, and that on-prem can either be co-located in a geographically proximal, geoproximal kind of data center, or it can be, in a closet, in a warehouse. It sort of depends. But the advantage that you receive when you move to the cloud is that you suddenly have this excess capacity, this burst capacity, and you have this excess storage capacity too, that doesn't require you to make these large investments in the operational infrastructure.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I'll chime back in here at the end of the segment here, folks. Fascinating conversation. I've taken a lot of good notes here, a lot of good ways of just describing things. And I agree with everyone who discussed the importance of focusing on business strategy. Don't focus on cloud just because you want to get to the cloud. No, it's an option, but you need to digitally transform. And so you want to talk to one of these guys about how to get there. But you got to start sooner or later. And I would recommend starting now if you're in a brick and mortar company. And we'll be right back, folks. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to the longest running show in the world about data. It's called DM Radio. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to DM Radio. Here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Welcome back once again to DM Radio. What a fantastic conversation today, talking with Danielle Oberdier from Dicayo Data. We have Jonathan LaCour on the line, Ankur Gupta and Randall Hunt from Mission, Bitwise, and Calent, respectively. Really interesting stuff about lift and shift, getting up into the cloud, and you want to get strategic about all that stuff. So let's dive right back in. Daniel, take it away.
Perfect. So now that we've heard from all of you individually about how Lift and Shift fits into, you know, your cloud organization, not strategy, important distinction. I want to, I guess, open up the floor to talk about some of the challenges, some of the major disadvantages that Lift and Shift has as a strategy, in addition to some of the major advantages that all of you have kind of discussed already. So that's why I brought up disadvantages first.
Maybe I can start. So I think this Lift and Shift still, it's limited. It is quick. It does, like I said, it's a starting point, as Jonathan and both Randall have mentioned. It's not the end goal. Usually, doesn't really take full advantage of what cloud offers. So, you know, the distributed workload that typical cloud applications would do. I've seen latency and performance could be a concern if it is not, as applications are not generally optimized or modified to suit the cloud environment. The in a lot of times, if you're not going to cloud native application, not really taking the full benefit of cloud. So that's generally, you know, again, maybe good for a starting point, but not the end strategy and some of the disadvantage this strategy offers.
I also think so far we've really only been considering the use case of on-prem to cloud, but the economy has evolved a little bit, and I you know, COVID really drove some of this. We're seeing now more and more cloud to cloud kind of Lift and Shift. And I think that's an important distinction, that we still talk about things using legacy terminology, and it's important to know where your customer is coming from. If they're coming from on-prem, then yes, you talk about kind of those on-prem migration strategies. But from cloud to cloud, there are a lot of things that are very different these days. And I don't really know, you know, that anyone has come up with a term to differentiate between the two. You know, it ends up being a very long conversation.
Yeah, that's really insightful, Randall. And, you know, we see that too. And it's really interesting because as the cloud continues to evolve further and further away from infrastructure, quite frankly, the way I'm a software developer by background as well, Randall. And so to me, you know, when I think about what the cloud is for me now and my vision going forward, it's very much like I used to go download, you know, a library, right, and have an API that I would interact with to do things. And it was all running on my machine. And maybe I was suffering through something like Enterprise Java Beans or whatever. Genuinely suffering, by the way. but now the cloud isn't just infrastructure as a service. It really has become, and I hesitate to call it platform as a service because I think that's a completely different thing in my mind. But it's really platform services or application services that you can build out, you know, using like serverless, for example, or, you know, any number of the AWS services out there that are unique. And then when you're moving cloud to cloud, that becomes a challenge, right? So the more you adopt those things, the better off that you are from being able to realize the advantage of the cloud, but you are, you know, going to have more work to do if you do a cloud to cloud migration.
And there's certainly tools that make the compute side of that migration easier. You know, now we have Kubernetes and you can define containers and pods and stuff. But when you talk back to data, you know, all of these different cloud providers, they make a large margin on their egress costs. So you're disincentivized to move from cloud to cloud. And when you do that, you're making a concentrated choice that this cost of egress, or perhaps you have a private pricing agreement, because each of these cloud providers will do that as well for significantly large customers. But, you know, you're making this bet that the cost of moving all of this is lower than your long-term operational cost. And some businesses don't always have the math quite right on that. And it takes a third party to come in and say, okay, let's do the 10,000 foot view, but also now that we've got this macro level, let's dive into the atomic level and really understand what's driving these costs and what are these things that you're moving.
And I think the cloud providers are recognizing that as well. And you know, AWS comes to us all the time, and you know, that's why there are funding opportunities, right? Like partner funding is a great way to say, like, okay, I understand you're going to pay out the nose for egress because that's the soda fountain at the fast food restaurant of the cloud, right? You know, $5 for sugar water, you know, $10 per gig. Anyway, you get my analogy. And so they'll cover that cost, or at least partially, to help incentivize you to move. So that's the other thing I'd say is, if you are thinking about doing a cloud-to-cloud migration or migration at all, talk to partners, because, you know, the cloud providers want your business, and they're going to make it as financially appealing as possible to make your decision easy. So that's the other thing to consider.
A lot of our partners actually like to keep multi-cloud too, just for the high availability. And, you know, I mean, you're seeing downtown pretty much all clouds very recently. And many businesses just can't afford that. If Netflix is down for 8 hours, you know what kind of world war it will start, who knows? But that's another thing we're coming up with. Companies not just, having on-prem cloud, but having multiple cloud from multiple providers at the same time.
If Netflix were to be down, you wouldn't want to be anywhere near New Orleans, because my anger and my wrath and my boredom will cause a tornado. We were talking before about how just FOMO, fear of missing out, is not a good reason to get involved in the cloud. So I want to get all of your thoughts on when do you know, as a company or a business or any of your clients, when do you know when you're ready, and what are some of the most common reasons that actually spark people to say, this is why I want to be in the cloud, this is my directive, let's go?
This was not always true. This may not be true in the future. But I say that for the next 1 to 5 years, there are fewer than 5% of businesses that should not have a cloud presence. Virtually every business should be in the cloud at this point, with certain, notable exceptions. That's probably a somewhat controversial thing to say, but I feel like I could back it up with data.
I feel the same way, Randall. I don't think that's too controversial. I mean, at least not in our circles, which is fair, because, we're all in on the cloud. but I do think, the other thing to consider when you're doing a migration cloud to cloud or into the cloud and multiple clouds, the more workload you have in a particular provider, the larger a discount that you can negotiate from a private pricing perspective. And so that's always sort of the challenge, right? Like, people think about multi-cloud as this sort of, mechanism for procurement or to reduce their fees. Actually, it's going to do the opposite. You're going to pay more, right? But there are other business drivers that, Ankur, you pointed out. Now, you may be able to achieve those in other ways, but I can certainly understand that too, right? And so I also agree, every company right now should have a cloud presence, for sure.
I mean, simplest of the use cases, you cannot have infinitely large infrastructure. The compute capacity. Sure. I think a lot of applications that come with the cloud ecosystem that you could use to drive business intelligence much better. It's just that's a fundamental use case. We always start asking why, for a use case, like, are you doing it just because you want to do it, or is there a big reason? And sometimes just cost, compute, all of this together make just easy use case to do it. How to do is the hard part, though.
There's something interesting too that I've been trying to educate not just our customers but a larger cloud audience on, which is, as your customers move to the cloud, things like VPC Private Link or AWS Data Exchange give you this capability to move your data between different AWS accounts and different cloud offerings in a much more cost-efficient way than if you were to do it pure egress over the internet. And those are the capabilities, as we reach this modern economy, that are going to be huge drivers. I'm really excited about that. And it's a little new, but I think it's a big advantage.
That is very cool stuff, folks. Well, this wraps up the live portion of our show here. I think we'll do a podcast bonus segment afterwards. But hats off to Danielle Overdeer of DiCaio Data, a real data star out of New Orleans. And big thanks to all of our friends here today. We've been talking to Randall Hunt of Kalent, and we've been talking to Ankur Gupta of Bitwise, and of course, Jonathan LaCour of Mission. Very, very interesting stories. And I think you gentlemen are right about the future of this industry, man. Cloud is the new center of gravity. There's no doubt, but on-prem data centers are not going to go away. We're going to get some really interesting information architectures rolling out of this next phase, and it's going to be fun to watch, folks. And it's all about performance and getting it done. We'll talk to you next time. You've been listening to DM Radio.
Yes, we are here with some bonus content for DM Radio, and I'm really happy to be here with these experts, Randall Hunt from Kalent and Jonathan LaCour from Mission and Ankur Gupta from Bitwise. So yes, tell the story. We are here for stories.
Okay, so I think people often misunderstand the scale of the data that we deal with. So, you know, we had a customer that had a lease expiring in their data center. And so they were highly motivated to get out of that data center. They also had, 300 plus terabytes of data to move on a 1 gig connection into the cloud. Now, 300 terabytes on a 1 gig connection takes a long time. It ends up being more efficient to use something called AWS Snowball, where they literally ship you a device full of hard drives and a couple compute nodes. And you plug in fiber, you plug in power, and it becomes a little addressable node within your existing infrastructure. So we did this real-time Postgres migration for a customer where we set the write-ahead logs on the Postgres cluster to whatever they needed to be. We shipped them the Snowball. We moved the snapshots of the data into the Snowball. We shipped that to AWS. We recovered those snapshots that AWS put into S3 onto an RDS cluster in AWS. And then we played the write-ahead logs from their on-prem center back into that RDS cluster. And that's technically lift and shift. A human had to lift the Snowball up and shift it. I love that.
You're shifting it from, in the OSI 7-layer burrito of networking, you're moving it to layer zero, right?
Yeah.
Physical.
I was so happy when you mentioned physics, because my grandmother was a famous physicist from India. And I'm just like, wow, you clearly just brought it to the material world. I love what you did there.
Physics controls all the boundaries for now. So
stupid speed of light.
No.
Ugh, it's the worst.
That's one of the interesting things within AWS too, though, is that with the way they design their AZs and their data centers, you have access to systems like Aurora, mm-hmm. where the storage and the compute are separated. And you can restore an Aurora snapshot in like seconds, regardless of size. And you can spin up a new compute node and plug it into that storage completely separately. And it's got that multi-AZ stuff built in. It's a very cool architecture. And
it
relies on that speed of light constraint.
Well, if physics is ruling the world for now, you said for now. So can you give us a hint on what will come in to take its place in the future?
I mean,
quantum computing. Don't tell me we're going to start on that now.
Yeah, that's a whole different show.
Probably many of those shows. But that's really, I keep hearing in many conversations with customers that, hey, is this an area you're focusing on? Is this coming up? And, to me, that truly pushes the boundary of physics. And that's really where, we're still dealing with cloud. But a lot of our customers still settle down. Let's do the cloud. And then, but it looks like a very, very interesting conversation for
one concept there worth kind of chatting through, though, is kind of post-quantum cryptography. So the security of your data.
Oh, my gosh.
If people have been collecting this data over time, adversaries or hackers, whatever, in a quantum computing environment, once it becomes ubiquitous or once it becomes more readily available than it is now, they could, with quantum insecure encryption, go and crack that traffic historically.
Yep.
So you have to use post-quantum kind of encryption methods and tools and key exchange algorithms to protect against that.
I just hash everything with MD5. It's fine. Right. I think for sure that's a very interesting, exciting time. We could just say stuff that everybody expects us to say and be like, it's all 5G. It's all edge. That's the real future. Sorry.
Keep them a really good line with that. With that philosophy.
5G is primarily a mechanism for cell carriers to charge me more money. That's
There's a really cool book by Neal Stephenson called Fall or Dodge in Hell. It's the sequel to his book. Yeah. And it talks about cloud providers and what the future could look like. And it presented this scenario where, you know, on-prem comes back and edge computing comes back, and you essentially just have servers owned and operated by different groups bidding, like an ad network would, on performing workloads. And that's always fascinated to me. I'd love to see someone build that. And I think Ethereum kind of said they were going to do that, but it doesn't work. Like it's not the realization of that ideal, but Neal Stephenson kind of reads the future, you know?
Love that, dude. Snow Crash is one of the most prescient books ever written, as far as I'm concerned. You got so much right.
I love that we're mentioning resources. That's like my favorite thing to end any podcast segment with, because there's so many people who are self-learning these days. And I think in the pandemic, a lot of you mentioned COVID, like that even amplified. And so, you know, like it's not all textbooks, it's audiobooks and websites and YouTube channels, and there's just so much at our fingertips to learn from. So it's really great when experts like you shout out names. I like pull out a metaphorical pen and paper, which is the notepad app on my iPhone, and make sure that I remember.
Well, we're giving you great fiction writer resources that are speculative fiction, so it's worth it.
Yes. Does J.R.R. Tolkien count as speculative fiction?
I think I'm going to go with no. Pure fantasy.
There's an old RFC for using Elvish as a TCP encryption mechanism, and I it's a real RFC. Let me see. I'll find it and
please
share
tweet
it later.
That to me. It would make my day. Even knowing it exists has made my day. All right. Are there any last words, not about Elvish yet? We'll have to check on Twitter for that. But any last words about Lift and Shift and the topic today?
I was going to say, Daniel, you mentioned resources. There are tons and tons of free resources available. You don't really have to, you know, read through a large book, I'm sure. Without any bias, I can say Bitwise Global has a lot of content, but I would say all of our three website companies will provide tons of information. I'd also, you know, go a step further and say, feel free to contact us, anybody. I'm sure our technology team would love to talk and, you know, provide a lot of insights. It's no more of a, you know, you have to pay a consulting fee to have an initial conversation. We'll be able, happy to provide use cases from companies we have worked with, happy to, you know, do an initial assessment, give you a point of view on what makes sense for you. So if a company or an individual is in that dilemma of, you know, what to do, I can say our technology team is available and ready to have a conversation and you know, provide that point of view and perspective from doing it for various industries.
You got lots of smart people in this room with smart teams that can help. And like you said, totally agree, right? No commitment or cost necessary to have a conversation, right?
Education.
Love it.
That's right.
Okay, well, I think this was really fun and perfect. So, yeah, I'm going to follow up with all of you on Twitter. And I really appreciate all of your insights.
Thanks for having us.
Good to see you all.
Thanks, guys.
It's great to meet all of you. Happy to meet up anytime. Just shoot me a
message. I'd love to connect, guys. We'll connect on LinkedIn and, you know, take the conversation forward. I'm glad
that. Okay, perfect. Yeah, I'll add you on LinkedIn, too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Great day, guys. Bye.